This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Panna Nayak is here. She was born in Bombay and is one of the leading writers of Gujarati. She has a newly published book, and she's going to tell us all about it. But first, what is Gujarati? Where is it?
Gujarat is a state in northwest India, and the Gujarati language is one of the major languages of India, and it's spoken by 40 million people. And Mahatma Gandhi was a Gujarati,
yes,
and his mother tongue was Gujarati.
And I understand that it is the fastest growing language in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes, there are a lot of Gujaratis all over the world.
Even in Canada and the United States.
Even in the Canada and Australia and Fiji and Mauritius, and Africa is full of Gujaratis too.
Panna Nayak is going to tell us all about her life in India, how she became a writer. And just to get a taste of her, let's have an opening poem. This is from her book, The Astrologer Sparrow.
The title of the poem is Family Portrait. After 20 years, I found my family portrait breathing life into two decades, three generations. How my father stands out, a man who embodied Gandhi's revolutionary times, and my mother, docile, head covered, a proper Gujarati lady. Despite those modern days of Bombay, brothers with their wives and children, and I among them, neither here nor there. The glaring sun squinting everyone's eyes has entered the photograph along with the chrysanthemums that will stay fresh as long as the portrait lives. In the background, the house with peeling plaster looks a little old, a little new. I put away the picture. The mind flashes. Darkness clears for a moment, and I see things as they are.
And it is said of your book that we can see things as they were in India, the sounds, the smells, the tastes. That is a great contribution. How do you describe that book, The Astrologer's Sparrow?
This is my new venture, writing in English, and I'm very pleased with the publication and the honor I got. And I want to explain the title a little bit, The Astrologer's Sparrow, because when I was working with my colleague, and she thought it was a very mystical title. So the background of the poem is, I used to go shopping with my mother, and one time, I was very young, so I got lost in the toy shop, and she couldn't find me, and she panicked, and she asked a lot of people, and then we have these astrologers sitting on the pavement, and they have birds in the cage, so they forecast future. So my mother stopped at the astrologer and asked whether they had seen me. She asked the bird whether she had seen me. So that's the background.
I love that. You see, you bring so many intimate stories of your culture in this book. It is such a precious thing. And we're so pleased to have you here. So let's hear another poem.
I have spent more years here than in India. But the one incident that strikes me every time I write a poem or read a poem, and that was the first time I came to the United States. I had come on the Air India jet and landed in New York. I was wearing the traditional outfit, my sari and the bindi or kumkum on the forehead. And I was standing in a line to get my passport stamped. And there was another woman standing behind me with a child. And the child was staring at me for some time, and I was intrigued. Why was he staring at me? And then he turns to his mother and says, "Oh, mommy, see, see, her forehead is bleeding." And so that time I was not a poet, but it struck me that I was a woman and I was a foreigner in America.
Oh, what a story.
So this immigrant experience, I have woven this into my next poem. So I'm going to read that. Kanku. Mommy, mommy, look, her forehead is bleeding. An American child's remark, innocent enough. Instinctively, I cover the mark on my forehead with my hand. I see the red smear of kanku, sign of life and good luck, in my open palm, and for a moment, I feel blessed.
Oh.
I feel again the embrace of Mother Teresa the day we met. But unlike her, I can offer neither blessing nor generosity. I make a fist to hide my blood-red palm. My nails dig deep into the skin. The child was right. I bleed.
You are a storyteller.
Thank you.
You are what we call a narrative poet, where you really tell a story from beginning to end. We know the characters in it. We know the situation in it. And it seems logical that you are a short story writer. I think you have about a dozen books of poems. You have about a dozen short stories, dozens of articles, intellectual, scholarly articles. How is the short story different from the poem in its inspiration and in its process?
I published about 10 volumes of poetry, and then I thought I should experiment with different form of literature. And there are short story elements in my poems, but I thought, it was a challenge to write a short story. And the form is very deceptive because poems are brief and you can end it in 2 pages, 3 pages. But short story, the twist and turn has to be there. And I took it as a challenge. So I published a short story collection entitled Flamingo in Gujarati. And they're all set in America. It's all the immigrant experiences, that collective experiences that I had and my friends had. So,
but is that in English?
I'm translating them into English.
We need that book very, very much. How many of your books are in English? Is Astrologer Sparrow the first?
The first one.
The first, but
the
you have many essays and
Essays and some translations are done.
In English. Yes.
And articles are done in English. I have done some research papers in English because I was a librarian at the University of Pennsylvania.
You're the whole package, yes. Pananayak, the whole package. And give us some more.
Okay. This is about my mother. I've written poems about immigrant experiences, nature, and my mother, who is no more. And man-woman relationships and all that. But here is a poem about my mother. Hair. Mother combed my hair when I was a child. Holding me still in front of her, sticking a mirror in my hand, she smeared my hair with homemade Brahmi oil. After taking all the tangles out, parting and braiding my long black hair, she tied silver bells at the tail end. She turned me around to face her. "Did you like the way I combed?" she asked. I just smiled. Sometimes, playfully, she tussled my combed hair. I would pretend to be angry. Today, my hair is short. Unoiled, it is dry and frazzled. Uncombed, unkempt. Breathing real anger, I look for my mother.
So interesting to use the context of hair for a relationship. What was your relationship with your mother?
I was very close to her. My mother was not highly educated, like my father. All of our siblings are highly educated, but not my mother. But she had interest in literature, unlike my father. And she remembered a lot of poems of devotional and non-devotional poetry. And then she would recite them in the morning while praying. And all day long, she would recite and recite and recite.
Oh, how interesting.
And that sort of instilled my interest in poetry.
Oh, you were immersed in language all day long.
Yes.
She gave you a great gift.
She did. She did.
In your culture, was the mother openly affectionate?
Yes, but...
Hugging and kissing?
But, yes. But with a large family, I had like 25 members of my family, extended family, living together. So I had 5 brothers, 4 sisters, and my poor mother. I'm the youngest. So my poor mother had no time for me. So she very much wanted to hug me, kiss me. And she would say, "Oh, Panna, I have raised you the way I knew the best. But forgive me if I didn't do enough for you."
Well, I think she did a lot for you because you're one of the leading feminist writers in Gujarati. Now, let me say if I'm saying that right, Gujarati.
Gujarati.
Yes.
Right, correct.
But you are a feminist writer because actually it is the male that is predominant in that literary world.
Yes.
And so you are leading the way and making a new path. And you've been honored for that.
Yes.
You are honored for that.
Yes. I came on the scene. Women's feelings and women's sensitivity, they were all expressed by men. And I had to fight that with the male-dominated society. So when I came on the scene, I started writing about women's feelings and a lot of taboo subjects. Like menstruation, not having children, they were not talked about.
Were you accepted? Were you accepted for that?
Yes, I was.
Wow,
made
a mark.
They thought I was bold, but I was accepted.
Oh, I'm so happy that you weren't actually rejected for this, because sometimes leaders have a hard path to begin. Let's have another poem and see another aspect of your rich, multidimensional life. This is Panna Nayak. She was born in Bombay and is one, I think, a predominant writer in her culture. And she is going to put Gujarati on the map in this area.
Thank you, Grace, for the kind introduction. And now the next poem I'm going to read about is called Homesickness. So when the immigrants come here, they crave for going home. And they're sort of torn between the two worlds. They want to go back and they can't go back. So that's the immigrant experience narrated in this poem. Now I don't feel the way I've written it. I cannot disown it. But this is the immigrant's feeling. Homesickness. Uprooting a flower tree from far away tropical Mumbai, I replanted it in Philadelphia's cold, alien soil.
Uh-huh.
I was absolutely determined to ensure its survival. But when the trees here spew the sickening pink of cherry blossoms, I long for the slow opening of glowing kesuda flowers. When the hard earth here splits and pours forth hot summer roses, my eyes cry red for Gulmohar. It rains here all year long, but I long for the lost seasons of rains, the monsoon fragrance of India that still caresses my skin. Here we have everything, and yet nothing. I'm homesick. Feel like packing my bags and going home. But where's my home now? Where's my home now? This is the feeling of an immigrant, belonging and not belonging.
Are you going to publish these in Gujarati?
Yes, I have published a lot of poems, and I'm writing.
But are you going
more.
To translate these?
Yes.
So that they will be in your native tongue?
Yes.
You have a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Is but, that going to be easy? Is it easier from
Gujarati to English?
I'm going to really say this right. Gujarati? Is it easier from Gujarati to English or from English to Gujarati?
It's easier from English to Gujarati. Only the Grace, I will tell you the problem about from Gujarati into English is that you cannot translate the image. That's the most difficult part. A language, I can translate. But how do I translate the image?
This is the reason they say translation is impossible, but yet we do it. But yet we do it. You have a lot cut out for you. You're writing a new book of short stories, a new book of poems. You're translating in both languages. I have to let them know that you are an emeritus librarian at the University of Pennsylvania. Pananayak holds 3 master's degrees in Gujarati and Sanskrit literature. From the University of Bombay.
Yes.
A Master of Science in Library Science from Drexel and a Master of Science in South Asian Studies from the University of Pennsylvania. I cannot believe how many clones have you made of yourself? How can one person do all this? First of all, Sanskrit. I am fascinated with this. Is it easier because you have some of the roots of Gujarati?
Yes.
Is it easier to learn Sanskrit?
Yeah, because we grew up listening to all these hymns and devotional stanzas. They're all in Sanskrit.
Oh.
And we have a very rich literature in Sanskrit.
Can you read it and write it?
I can read it and understand it. But it's not spoken like Latin. So the major languages of North India are all derived from Sanskrit. So we have a lot of common words.
I see.
And I was just talking to Nat the other day that we have so many words like a lotus. And we have all kinds of shades in Sanskrit. And in Gujarati.
Like a lotus, quite a poet. Only a poet would say that.
Right. So for an ocean, there are 25 words. For an elephant, there are 25 words. And with different shades.
Oh.
So when you say sunlight, it's different in the morning. And it's different in the evening.
So interesting. Do we have an essay from you about that yet?
Yes.
Okay, because that is worth writing.
Yes.
That is really a contribution. And another contribution is your beautiful poetry.
Okay.
So here we go, Pananayak.
And this is another poem of nostalgia.
Which is one of the great tools that the writer has.
Did someone say I left India? That's the title. It is long since I left India. At the air-conditioned JFK airport, dressed in an American clothes, I do not draw attention. Now I do enjoy tea with lemon, not necessarily with spices. Also, for some time, the Indian face in my passport has had American fingerprints and seals of official immigration. Waiting for your arrival, I pick up the New York Times. While turning the pages, my eyes pause where the news of India appears. Reading these items, my mind returns to girlhood and I visit my parents' home in Mumbai. My eyes look for India in the national and international columns. I have never left India.
What was your home like in Mumbai?
Oh, it was a beautiful home. It was an old home. But as you can imagine, we had to have room for 25 people. So we never had room for each person.
Was there a central place where everyone can join?
Yes.
And how did you eat your meals? Not everyone ate at once.
No, not everyone. But mostly my brothers and my father would eat first, and the women folk would eat later. That's the tradition. But we had a garden, and we had a well in the compound, and so I grew up with flowers and trees, and so I cannot live without flowers and trees. And this country, I mean, I'm so pleased to say that I love this country for its nature.
Oh,
I love all the seasons. My favorite flowers are cherry blossoms in Washington, of course, and daffodils.
Do you have those in India?
No, we do not.
What other flowers do you not have in India?
We don't have tulips and chrysanthemums and petunia. Because I talk about this, the contrast, that what trees we have and what flowers we don't have.
This is so valuable.
Yes.
This is the bridge we need in this world. If it were not for the writers, if it were not for the poets, we would be isolated robots in our little cubicles, because you bring us, as many of your reviewers have said, the sights and the sounds, the floods, and you even miss the floods of India.
Yes, we do.
And those torrential rains, how long do they last?
Oh my God, it lasts for like 8 days, 10 days. You don't see the sun. I mean, deluge of rains.
And do people go about their business?
Their business, yes. They nothing we can do about it.
How often?
Especially Bombay.
How often do you return?
To Bombay?
India at all?
To India. I used to go every year till my parents were alive. Mm-hmm. And now I go to India every time I need to publish a book, which is
every 3 years.
Yes.
Well, we are so glad that you're beginning your publishing career in America, because we need you and we want you and we want to hear another poem.
Thank you very much. Okay. Now, since I have lived here for so many years, I'm an insider and I'm an outsider. So I'm going to read two more poems. How impersonal this society is. How an Indian views supermarket. And so this is supermarket. Without talking about it, I would rather read it. Supermarket. Grocery shopping, Saturday's weekly ritual. My eyes and hands play a familiar game with prices stamped on shelved items. This was a long time ago, so that's when the items were stamped. Fruit and vegetables cry out to be freed from plastic wrap and air conditioning. Lambs hang headless on racks. I can hear screams of grief in boneless chicken in family size. Milk is fortified, homogenized, pasteurized, and vitamins added. I wonder how the cows feel. Words are muffled amidst people's shuffle. I only hear the sound of hustling high heels, rattle of worn-out shopping carts, and money swallowed by cash registers. I come out of the supermarket, listening with my eyes, speaking with my hands. See, in India, we go to the market and talk to the vendors, haggle the prices, and all that. But that's not done here.
Let's hear another poem.
Okay.
And we have to say, The Astrologer's Sparrow is available. And it is on the shelf now. It's on Amazon. Yes. And if you want to sit down and just cuddle up on a cold winter's night with all these in your hands, then you are welcome to look up for this book, The Astrologer's Sparrow.
I'm going to read one poem because I'm a feminist poet. So here is a poet called Lioness. You may stroke my neck with fingers now. I will not roar. I have become a tamed animal. No need to worry that I may be dangerous. See, the bat licks your hand, your cheek, your nose, and she rolls over at your feet. Don't you feel the touch of her soft hair? My needs are a few. A little milk, meat, and a small corner in your mansion. You are a lion, and I'm a lioness.
Mm-hmm.
You can lift and throw me in the air. I won't tear you with my claws. Here, put your hand on my neck and mouth. Cup my soft muzzle. See, I'm a tamed lioness. But you don't want me as a pet. I know you want to let me loose somewhere in the acacia forest. I also know why. It's because I refuse to meet your demand. You want a lioness that never roars. Oh, naivete, no such creature exists. You seek mythology.
What a wonderful poem.
Men want women to be submissive and intellectual at the same time.
Terrific poem. And one last.
And the last one? The title is My Poetry, My Planet. This is all about my essence of my poetry. It bears my strength, betrays my weakness, my face without any makeup, the core of my thought, truth captured in my eyes, transparency of glass, lava of my emotions, the voice for repressed women's suppressed feelings, a nudge to snug society, the planet's blueness, the fragrance of the world's flowers, the landscape of butterflies, greatness of friendship, fulfillment of love, no bitterness, no yesterdays, no tomorrows, no desire to leave any imprint, just seizing the moment. And that's my poetry, my planet.
The beautiful voice of Pana Nayak. This series is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support from the Sinipet Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I am Grace Cavalieri.